drink business, or the bottled water business, or heck, the wine business. But how do you avoid annoying people, or worse, sounding like spam? Everybody has a different idea of what's annoying. I don't mind hearing from somebody interested in sending me free stuff that I can actually use. And remember, the only way that you, the content provider, can contact anyone is if they choose to follow you. You cannot DM, which stands for direct message them otherwise. It's the equivalent of extending your hand and allowing someone to choose whether or not to shake your hand. You also want to pitch your message in a very proactive, cool way. You're not telling Jillian to go buy your stuff. You're giving her a chance to try it. You're also not hiding your affiliation with your company. If someone chooses to follow you, they'll see on your profile that you are a manager of the Advil brand. If you stay above board, honest, most people will be willing to listen to what you have to say about your product. But the second you DM someone and they decide you sound slimy, they will unfollow you. Their bullshit detector is better than any spam filter you've ever seen. Don't betray their trust. If your blog is your home, platforms like Twitter and Facebook are your vacation homes. You can't do long-form content on these sites. Well, you can, but it's not really recommended in my opinion. And you need someplace that is a free place to do business where people don't have to be members to see you. Your content permanently resides on your blog, and you use these platforms to distribute your brand and bring eyes back to your home. When the book became available for pre-sale, I used both Twitter and Facebook to bring eyes back to my blog and, crucially, to convert my call-to-action buttons into brand-building opportunities. Here's how. I posted a video on my blog, excitedly making the announcement. I talked about what the book is about and why it means so much to me. Along with the expected links to Barnes & Noble and Amazon, I included a line that said, "Pass this book on to your friends," with links to Twitter and Facebook below. If you chose Twitter, you found a pre-written tweet to send out that included link back to my blog and, in particular, the video announcing the book. If you chose Facebook, you came upon a message box where you could write a post, then update your page with a link to my blog attached. By the way, I'm going to veer off for a second. These are massively crucial, crucial tactics. Word of mouth is on steroids. Word of mouth is the game now. And word of mouth is how you build businesses. Word of mouth is how your grandparents built business. Word of mouth is how every restaurant, every brand has built business. And using and populating these word of mouth tools like Facebook and Twitter can really extend your brand and your story. In addition, I included a button on my blog that said "Support Gary's Book," which led you to a new page in which I thanked you for your interest and provided a widget for the book that you could add to your own website or blog. That page also included the links to Twitter and Facebook and, as always, my email address. Though, as you can tell, I'm a huge fan of Twitter and Facebook, they are becoming household names and the competition there is already pretty fierce. So I'm considering a new strategy. Why not explore some of the other Facebook-like sites, even though they have fewer fish in the pond? True, the ponds are smaller, but their banks aren't swimming with other fishermen either, which means you have a much better chance of walking away with a hefty catch. Some sites that I'm watching closely are the following. Plaxo, which is a professional site, which I haven't delved into just as of yet, but is a big one for me in 2010. High Five, another social network that's much bigger than people recognize. Bebo, which is huge in the UK and the third biggest social network behind Facebook and MySpace. Friendfeed, which is now bought by Facebook, by the way, since I originally wrote the book, and it's going to be really interesting to see how Facebook integrates the Friendfeed features. As we all know, they probably bought the company, though, for the talent. Orkut, which is Google-owned, kind of fading away, but is huge in Brazil. And so if you're trying to hit that market, it's important you follow that site. Flickr. Flickr's really interesting. It's a photo site. I'm going to get into it in a second, but let me add a couple of other things. LinkedIn, which I completely did not talk about in my book when I wrote it and came out in print in October, and you guys are getting the advantage of listening to this and hearing this. I think LinkedIn is making a fierce comeback. I actually never really even used it. A lot of people in a different demo, a more professional demo, have been using it solely. I really think as they open up their API and as they're integrating more and some of the new blood in that company, I'm going to be very intrigued to watch LinkedIn in 2010, and I'm making a big effort to use it heavily. Flickr is a photo sharing site and is definitely a pond worth fishing in. It has a ton of passionate users, though I'm not one of them, for the sole reason that photos don't really speak to my DNA. They do, though, for a lot of other people. Any platform that has loads of search capabilities is an important place to find market opportunities, and there are millions of people searching Flickr. As with all content, you work the content on this site in two ways. You can post photographs so that when people click on them, they find out who you are and they follow you back, or it links directly back to your blog, or you can click on other people's photos, leave comments that will intrigue people to then look at your stuff and link back to you. If your passion is something that photographs well, like birds, or jewelry, or hairstyling, or interior design, it's a place where you can do a lot of damage. If I throw a wine party, I can post pictures of the event, which could pique someone's interest. Or I can put up a label on every wine I've ever discussed on my show and could conceivably draw a lot more traffic to my blog. In fact, now that I'm thinking about it, it's insane that I haven't done that. And that's what I said back in October, and I'm starting to do more of it with Kay Murph from Wine Library coming in and taking pictures while I do the show, but I'm going to take it even further and do the labels in 2010. See, I'm getting pumped myself reading this thing. Anyone who cares about wine should be able to find me on Flickr, so I better get on that. I admire Moo.com, M-O-O.com, because they have used Flickr and Facebook to reinvent an old, tired product. They're in the business card business, notes, and stickers. Customers can use their own photos or upload images from any of the Moo partner sites. You can even print a different image on every business card within a single pack, allowing you to let people choose their favorite one and creating a ready-made conversation piece around your brand. It goes to show you that any product can be huge when approached from a new angle. What I like about Moo is they really went in and owned the social media crowd. They went to a lot of conferences. They gave away a lot of free business cards. This is something a lot of people can learn in traditional business. You could become the brand within the social media sphere by going to the conferences. So if you're a soda or a coffee or a t-shirt company, you know, pens, I mean, anything, you can kind of own that niche. And that niche, as it's really called, is very interesting because the users of that space have big social mouths. They're using Facebook and Twitter already, so they're going to spread your message more so than an influential Wall Street crowd, which is going to stay within their confines. Think about that. YouTube and/or Vidler. These are both video platforms that I use and like. YouTube is like an ocean. It's huge. You go out in it, and you can come home with a boatload of fish. But you're also competing against millions of fishermen. Vidler is much smaller, which allows you to see and be seen with greater ease. It also allows you to brand your player so that anyone who watches the video sees your logo on the bottom, which I think has enormous value, especially when people embed your video in different places. If you use YouTube, the YouTube logo appears at the bottom of all their videos. So that's where it gets really interesting to me. Vidler also allows you to tag your videos, which means you can earmark important moments for your viewers by placing a little dot within your video stream linked to any keyword, allowing for an easier search situation. Plus, if somebody wants to find a specific and particular spot in your video, they don't have to sit throughout the whole thing. For example, I do a 30-minute wine show and discuss three wines. If you're interested in the third wine, you can go straight to that segment of the video because I'll have it marked. And you don't have to bounce around and click and guess. You can just go exactly where you want to go. This was a huge reason why I switched to Vidler very early on in my career. In hindsight, I still think YouTube has such a powerful presence, and there's so many people in that space that you can't overlook it. But I do love the niche aspects of Vidler. Clearly, YouTube has a larger user base, which can definitely be an advantage. You can embed from either site, which is easy to do by copying and pasting the embedded code. I do give Vidler enthusiastic thumbs up for the way it takes care of its users. Have you ever wondered how a certain video gets featured on its home site? YouTube is huge and so swamped with video submissions that featured videos are usually a result of random luck, a lot of back-end biz development, and inside deals. Because Vidler is smaller, however, their staff is quickly able to assess new talent on their network and support that talent by featuring it on their homepage. Vidler doesn't wait for you to make it big. They'll give you a shot for a day or two if they think you're good enough. They're great at identifying talent early on. Ustream.tv. There is no way to overstate the importance of Ustream, one of the biggest brand-building products that I've used. It's a platform that allows you to launch live video, but the cool part is that there is a chat function which allows you to interact with your audience in real time, much like radio call-in shows. How does the content you post on Ustream differ from what you post on your video blog if that's your preferred medium? Think of your blog as a formal presentation, a prepared speech about a predetermined topic in which you control the message and all the content. Once you've said your piece, you're done. If anyone wishes to challenge you or ask for a clarification or a comment, they certainly can, but some time will pass before they get their answer. By the time you get back to them, you may have to remind them what they asked for in the first place. If you decide to address their question in a follow-up video, you have to hope that they'll come back and hear what you have to say. Ustream, on the other hand, allows you to talk about your brand the way you might do at a cocktail party, which allows you to kind of work the room and find out what's on everybody's mind. By responding to the chats while you're live streaming, you can establish the most powerful and empowering interactive brand experience any customer has ever known. Even live television can't provide this kind of immediacy. It's so sticky. People love to know that they can come in and talk one-on-one. Best of all, it costs you nothing. Ustream is another classic example of the internet platforms that cost the brand and a product nothing to use, yet provides amazing return on its investment. I'm going totally off script right now because I'm freaking pumped, because here's the bottom line. Ustream to me is quickly becoming my number one platform. Not Twitter, not Facebook, Ustream. Why? Because I go in there and I riff and I'm hanging and I'm chilling with my friends, and more importantly, almost always 300 to 400 people show up immediately. That's right, I snap my fingers. Immediately, 300 to 400 people are in there, and I'm talking, and I'm bouncing ideas off them, and I'm doing Q&A. It allows me to really get intimate with people, and my big goal for 2010 is to do a daily Ustream show. I've been thinking about a show called Tea with Gary V, where I do like a morning show, and we like read the posts from like TechCrunch and TechMeme and the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, and kind of talk about what's current event-driven. I just find it very fascinating that this live interaction of Ustream has quickly become the best tool in my toolbox, and I think many people are underestimating it. Most people don't understand it. Most people can't do it because it's kind of hard going live and then reading the chat that's coming at you at 100 miles a minute. But the fact of the matter is, if you can pull it off, if you feel like you know your subject well enough to riff and not be prepared like I do, which is like why I dominate the keynote circuit, because I just go up there and riff and I'm not scared because I'm living it. When you live your subject matter, when you know it cold and you don't need to go to Wikipedia or read, you know, a book before you go and give your presentation or make PowerPoints to lead you, when you know it best, then you really have the best chance of dominating. And that is why Ustream is so powerful, because there's no buffer. You're live. They're watching you and they're asking you questions and you can't dodge them. And you've got to show your chops. And if you've got chops, this is a platform you want to be a part of. Natasha Westcote is an artist known for her candid landscapes and whimsical characters. She is rising in popularity as a result of using social media tools to connect to her audience and engage with her collectors and potential buyers. As a result, her business has grown 50% in 6 months and her business network 80%. In addition to Twitter, she uses Ustream.tv to live stream her paintings in the studio. It began as an experiment, but within a week, she had viewers buying directly from her live online video. Since then, she has used it as a tool for studio sales and auctions. By allowing viewers to watch her create something, it inspires them to buy it directly then and there. I'm riffing off again. I'm on a roll here. I just got one thing for you to think about. One thing to say. QVC. Word of mouth power moves. There are a few additional tools that can add to real boosts in your word of mouth potential. Here they are. Just as it would be a shame to decide that Chardonnay is your favorite wine when you've hardly tried any other varietal, you should try every platform to see which ones work best for you. Now, when I was just getting started, Chris Mott, my camera guy, had to spend hours every night individually loading the blog onto every single platform we were using. Luckily, there are now two sites that are doing this service a lot easier. Ping.fm, P-I-N-G.fm, is a service that allows you to post a limited amount of text, such as status update, one time and then automatically distribute the updates to any of over 30 social networks, including Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, Flickr, WordPress, Jaiku, FriendFeed, MySpace, and Delicious. Currently, the service does not allow for video, but according to that site, it's coming soon. If you're a video blogger, you must have a TubeMogul account. It's a website that allows you to upload your video once, and then it distributes it across countless video sharing sites for free. It's also a tracking service and offers analytics about who's watching your videos, when and what sites, and how often. I should also riff off real quick and say that Blip.tv, BLIP.tv, is also really starting to get in this space and doing an amazing job. Analytics. I use analytics very rarely, and I urge you not to rely too much on them early on, especially. If you have really good business instincts, you're not going to need them. A lot of the times, the stats and percentages related to my business just don't support what my instincts are saying and what I think is true, and I'll trust my gut over numbers any day. What if your analytics tell you that you've only had 7 views on Break.com in 2 months? Are you going to stop posting to that platform? The data are telling you that you should probably drop it. But what you don't know is that one of the 7 viewers is the producer of the Today Show. There's no reason to think that can't happen. The numbers can be a trap that changes your behavior. People see they've only gotten 50 viewers in a few weeks and decided they suck and they stop trying as hard. Or their video catches on and gets watched 1,000 times and they think they've made it and they stop trying as hard. Metrics can be useful, of course, but the effect of your online interactions and the excitement building toward your brand isn't accurately reflected by the number of viewers you have. It's not about how many viewers you have, it's about how passionate they are. If you must use them, analytics should remain a minor league detail. Focus the majority of your attention on your overall brand positioning. I'm going to riff off here a little bit, and I feel like this is one of the great missed opportunities in Crush It. I should have went deeper into this. I think analytics are important. I know that's how you sell things. I know that's how big brands in corporate America work, and I get it. But I'm telling you, it is an absolutely scary pitfall for so many people. They see poor stats, they don't see growth, they see something's going stagnant, and they completely lose focus. They get numbers driven, and it veers you off. I promise you, if you feel it, if you've got good interactions, if you've got great relationships, you're heading in the right direction. Way, way too many people are being crippled by stats, and they really allow them to define the project. It's devastating to me. And please, and this is the big one, don't look at stats for the first year. Put your head down, grow a beard, a playoff beard, shut your mouth, get to work. Don't look at stats because they're going to hurt you. Facebook Connect is a service that allows new users of your site to skip the long process of registering their personal information. How many hundreds of times have you filled out the boxes asking for your name, address, password, and so on by now by pulling it from their Facebook page? It will also allow Facebook profile data to save them the slog of having to fill out yet again all of the personal information onto the new site. So Facebook Connect is a huge time saver for the viewers. In addition, when Facebook member clicks Connect with Facebook, an announcement will be sent out to his or her friends. Facebook's newsfeed on his or her wall will show that the user is now a user of your site. By now, you should know why that's a good thing. People with similar tastes to your new users see the newsfeed and say, what's that? And then come and see for themselves. If you're telling a story well and putting out awesome content, there's no reason they won't return and bring more friends, and then on and on and on, and that becomes a process you want to be a part of. We're going to see a lot more Facebook Connect in the future. It allows such quick interaction and site building that it has the potential to become an omnipresent and necessary as your cell phone and email account. I'm going to veer off real quick for 2 seconds. I truly believe that Facebook's well on its way to becoming the driver's license. And through Facebook Connect, we are going to know everybody's identity, no more hiding. And once Facebook wins that game, once they become the driver's license, it's very easy to become the credit card. Once Facebook becomes the wallet, in my opinion, they will become the most valuable website on the internet. For a comprehensive list of many more tools and applications, go to somewhatfrank.com, somewhatfrank.com, and search social media. Also, check out the following blogs: TechCrunch.com, ReadWriteWeb.com, GigaOM, GigaOM.com, SocialTimes.com, Engadget, Engadget.com, and a great site, TechMeme, TechMeme, kind of aggregates all this content in one place. Differentiate yourself. Everything we've talked about in this audiobook so far, passion, knowing yourself, personal branding, word of mouth, has always been important to every successful business in history. These social network sites have only changed the game by giving entrepreneurs a reason to ditch the sinking traditional media and advertising platforms in favor of communication methods that open up the markets that would have never been accessible to them and completely has changed the game in just a few short years. The thing is, just having a presence on these platforms doesn't get you any further ahead of the competition because most entrepreneurs are getting wise to the need of having a Facebook or Twitter account, not to mention all the other platforms we've discussed. So how are you going to differentiate yourself from all these other clowns? Of course, clowns in the best way. We don't want to diss anybody. You know, just getting competitive now. You're going to do your content better. That's how. And you're going to do it your way, using the tools we just discussed. Vitamins can give your body a real boost, but they won't do you much good if you don't incorporate exercise, proper nutrition, and even vaccines into your healthy habits. The same goes for these platforms, people. Each one individually gives your personal brand strength and reach, but if you use them together properly, they can turn you into a force to be reckoned with. The other thing you're going to do is accept that just having good content and internet access is not enough to take your business to the top. There are a lot of people who have good content, and everyone has the same access to the same tools. What they don't have, though they may think they do, and what we'll talk about in the next chapter makes all the difference. After all, lots of people can play the piano, but not everyone is Billy Joel. Chapter 7. Keep it real. Very real. Authenticity. We've talked about paying attention to your DNA, but while the concept of authenticity is closely related, it's not the same. Your DNA dictates your passion, whatever it is you were born to do. Being authentic and being perceived as such by your audience relies on your ability to ensure that every decision you make when it comes to business is rooted in being true to yourself. You may want to rewind that part. It was that important. For example, I would love to change the opening to my show. It starts off the same almost every time. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Wine Library TV. I am your host, Gary Vaynerchuk. And this, my friends, is the Thunder Show, a.k.a. the Internet's most passionate wine program. You see, it's not exactly what some wine lovers were looking for from a wine expert. I lose about 12% of my viewers right off the bat because I yell and scream like a maniac. For a business guy like me, that number is not even digestible. It's devastating. I desperately want to change the opening of my show to do something a little more calm, a little more refined, something that won't scare people away. Not like something completely not me, but, you know, just a hair chill. You know what I mean? But I can't, because the yelling and screaming, that super excited guy, that's me. If I try to tone things down and make myself appealing to that 12%, I can guarantee that everything I've built up to now would start slipping away. Because now, every time I'd go in front of the flip cam or the camera, I'd be putting on an act. I'm not putting on a performance when I do my show. I'm just being me. Invest in important stuff. One of the silliest and most ridiculous questions I get, hey Gary, what mic do you use? To that I reply, why are you even worrying about that? Your content has nothing to do with the mic, the camera, the lighting, or the set. The day I filmed my first Thunder Show, I sent a stock boy out to buy a $400 camera from Best Buy. Now I use a fancy Sony camera, so it is a little bit more expensive. That being said, more and more of my shows lately are being done on a flip cam, which costs 150 bones. Watch the show, and what do you see? It's me. It's sometimes me and my dad, or guests like Wayne Gretzky or Jim Cramer. It's a bunch of bottles on my table and a Jet spit bucket. I only invest in effort and thoughts of what I need to do to create great content, because at the end of the day, that is the differentiator. That is the sauce that wins the game. My business blog, GaryVaynerchuk.com, is even less dressed up. A lot of times I'm filming in my office, which is usually a mess. I could clean up my office and make it look more professional and polished, but it just seems wrong. There's no reason to change it just because the flip cam is running. There's nothing scripted and nothing staged about my blog, and I always, always do it in one take. No redos, no tweaks. If somebody walks into my office, then that's fine. If somebody's walking by, I'll wave at them. Whatever happens during my taping, the audience will see. If I sneeze, crap. If I fart, it doesn't matter. It's got to be completely real. I filmed posts from balconies, hotel rooms, the street, even the editor of my book's office. Anywhere the idea strikes me, I am going to film. Sometimes the sound quality sucks. Sometimes, not sometimes, almost always the lighting is awful. But as long as my point gets across to my audience and it's done in an authentic way and it's real and I drill it, well, then I don't care. Once upon a time, the most popular celebrities were boxed up in such a slick, sleek package that it was almost impossible to get a feel for who they really were. Every move was choreographed, even their love lives. And even when they hit the red carpet, they were red carpet ready. Those days are long gone, or at least starting to substantially slip away. The celebrities of today, the ones who are making a huge impact by connecting with their fans, whether on screen or online, are all about keeping it real and being themselves. No matter how big or small you want to go, your authenticity will be the root of your appeal and is what will keep people coming back to your site and spreading the word about your personal brand, service, or whatever else you're offering. If you want to dominate the social media game, all of your effort has to come from the heart. And it can't come from the heart in the passionate, irrational, wholehearted way it needs to if you're trying to be anyone but yourself. Authenticity is what will make it possible for you to put in that kind of hustle that's necessary to crush it. Going off the script, I think that Chad Ochocinco from the Cincinnati Bengals is playing it perfectly. He's being real. He's being vulnerable. And those things are valuable and just authentic and have dramatically made him more popular across the country. We're seeing a lot more other brands and people going this route as well. And it's working for them because they're real. They're not puppets. Hustle. I've said it over and over that if you live your passion and work the social networking tools to the max, opportunities to monetize will present themselves. I've also said that in order to crush it, you have to be sure your content is the best in its category, or at least extremely good. You can still make plenty of money if you're the fourth best in a category or ninth best, but if you really want to dominate the competition and make big bucks, you're going to have to be the best. Do that, be that, and nobody will be able to reach you. With one exception, somebody with less passion and talent and poor content can totally beat you if they're willing to work longer and harder than you are. Hustle is it. Without it, you should just pack up your toys and go home. Just veering off into a sports reference, look at all the number one and number two picks. You know, Ryan Leaf, Achilles Smith, you know, Blair Thomas. You know, these guys would be the best players in football because they had the most talent, but their work ethic sucked and they got outplayed, and that's the bottom line. They got outworked is what they really did. And so hard work is going to have to be a cornerstone of your success. Now, I'm betting that most people who pick up this book consider themselves hard workers. Many are probably just sick of the killer hours and inflexible schedules and demanding bosses often found in the corporate world and think entrepreneurship will somehow be less taxing. I hate to disappoint you, but if you're looking for an easier time here, you are barking up the wrong tree. There might be a little more flexibility to your day should you be at liberty to devote yourself full time to building your personal brand. But otherwise, assuming you're doing this right, you'll be bleeding out of your eyeballs at your computer. You might have thought your old boss was bad, but if you want your business to go anywhere, your new boss had better be a slave driver. Too many people don't want to swallow the pill of working every day, every chance they get. If you're making money through social media, you don't get to work for 3 or 4 hours and play Nintendo for the rest of the day. That is lip service to hard work. No one makes millions of dollars with minimal effort unless they win the lotto. The cool thing about hustle, though, is it's one more thing that equalizes the playing field. 15 years ago, you could have a rock-solid idea of your DNA and your passion, but there was a billion-to-one chance you'd actually be crushing it in that business. The platforms and channels were just too narrow and guarded by some pretty tight gatekeepers. Now, what we can take advantage of is the explosion of tremendous and free digital platforms of the internet, which are also making the gatekeepers more and more irrelevant. And now it's no longer a special interest story if you make it big without family connections or money or an education, because anyone and everyone can do it. The only differentiator in the game is your passion and your hustle. Don't ever look at someone else who has more capital or cred than you and think you shouldn't bother to compete. You may only have a couple $100,000 or less, and your biggest competitor may have a $50 million business, but if you can outwork him or her and have a great idea, you will win over time. Anything insane has a price. If you're serious about building your personal brand, there will be no more time for the Wii. No more time for Scrabble or book club or poker night or watching hockey. There will be time for meals, catching up with your significant others, playing with the kids. Otherwise, you will be in front of your computer until 2 or 3 a.m. every night. If you're unemployed or retired and have all day to work, maybe you can knock off at midnight instead. Expect this to be all-consuming. The thing is, if you're living your passion, you're going to want to be consumed by your work. There's no room for relaxation or flopping on the couch with some popcorn to watch TV kind of thing. You know, you're not going to be stressed or tired. You're going to be relaxed and pumped. The passion and love for what you do will enable you to work the ridiculous amount of hours that are necessary. You're going to lose track of time. Go to bed reluctantly and wake up in the morning excited to do it all over again. You'll be living and breathing your content, learning everything you can about your subject, the tools, your competition, and talking nonstop to other people that are interested in the same thing. As hard as you're going to push yourself, don't plan on seeing results right away. I'd say that this leads us to the number of issues tripping up people that are otherwise savvy entrepreneurs in building their brand online. Patience. 90% of the people I hear from are in complaint mode, usually to the tune of, I'm working so hard and I'm crushing it and nothing happens. Gary, what gives? So I ask, how long have you been doing this? And they'll usually answer me and say something like, I don't know, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, a month. You don't build businesses in 6 weeks, 6 months. You know what? Not even 6 years sometimes. If you contact me within a year of starting your business to complain that you haven't made it yet, like you thought you would, I promise you I'm deleting your email. I'm not going to listen. I said that you could make a ton of money and be happy. I didn't say it was going to happen overnight. People listen to me talk about what it takes to monetize their personal brand, and sometimes I think they filter out the parts they don't want to hear. They think, I've got the passion. I can do the hustle like nobody else. Patience? I'm going to leave that to the other guys. Those guys are suckers. I'm going to work smarter. But patience is the secret sauce. Once you put up your site, you don't want to start and stop and backtrack and second guess. It'll make you look insecure and foolish. If you're patient, you'll be more likely to plan and prepare to make sure everything is in place before making the big moves that are going to monetize your brand to the fullest. Everyone makes a big deal that it only took 18 months for me to land on Conan O'Brien after launching Wine Library TV. I started taping episodes back in 06, back before most people were even watching videos online. I'm sure if I started a blog today, now that more people have iPhones and are watching videos online, it would even take me less time to get on everybody's radar. Yet, as fast as the results seem to have happened, I can assure you that the whole process took a hell of a lot more time. You'll recall that I was only 16 when I started working the floor at Shoppers Discount Liquors, selling wine to customers, which meant that I still couldn't even drink the stuff. I knew, though, that appreciating wine and therefore being able to sell it and discussing it confidently meant developing a great palate. I read all the tasting notes in the Wine Spectator and started learning to identify flavors of things that I could easily find at ShopRite or Whole Foods or King's, like pears and papayas, cherries and chocolate, blackberries. But I didn't stop there, though. I got more exotic. I started tasting things like cassis and black raspberries, starfruit. I recently even discovered goji berries. Good stuff, by the way. But there was more. Critics noted hints of cigar, dirt, and even sweaty socks in wine. I knew they were guessing. There was no way they'd sucked a sweaty sock. And I thought, well, if I'm going to say something like sweaty sock, shouldn't I know what it tastes like? So I gave myself an education. By the time I was 21, I had an incredibly developed palate, even though I hadn't drunk much wine at all. When I started developing the idea of building Wine Library TV, and later GaryVaynerchuk.com, I knew that I would have to use the same kind of patience and methodology to learn the social media business as I did the wine business. It was patience that helped me grow Wine Library. I was 22 years old and running a $10 million business. I did it with good old-fashioned hustle. Every customer who walked through the door got monetized to the fullest. If they walked in for one bottle, they usually walked out with three. And I was being paid $27,000 a year. Most young people that took a business from $4 to $10 million would feel like they deserved a watch, a car, a cool apartment, as rewards for their savviness and hard work. Get over that. You come last. Before you invest in yourself, you have to invest in your long-term future. That means your profits should funnel right back into research, your content, your staff, all that. The sooner you start cashing in, the shorter the window you have to which to cement your success. So hold off as long as you can. This is why, as ambitious and thirsty as I was for mega success as a business developer, I did not make a peep anywhere in the first year and a half that I was airing the show. I didn't try to make one biz dev deal. I probably could have made some success had I jumped the gun, but by remaining patient and making sure I knew exactly what I was doing, I was able to avoid taking any steps backwards once the speaking engagements, consulting opportunities, and advertisers started showing up. How did someone like me, who is so obviously not a patient guy, cool my heels for so long? Because I was 100% happy. I loved what I was doing. I knew down to my core that my business was going to explode. But even if it had fallen flat on my face, I would have no regrets because what I was doing was exactly what I wanted to do, the way I wanted to do it. And more importantly, I was learning. I was doing it for the process. I knew that online video was going to be big, and even if the show wasn't huge, I was going to learn a lot. And the education in doing it is massive. Now, do you get why it's so important to center your business around your passion? If you enter a niche because you're following the dollars, you won't keep up. It's too much work, and you'll get tired and frustrated and eventually fold. You have to think about building your brand in terms of a marathon. It's not a sprint. It will take long to see results, but in 7 or 9 or 15 years, you won't crack because you love what you're doing. What exactly are you going to be doing that's going to be so time and labor intensive? You'll be studying your topic, researching your platforms, drafting your blog posts, doing whatever it takes to become the foremost expert and personal brand in your field. But most of all, you will be creating a community. Chapter 8. Create Community. Digging Your Internet Trench. A lot of people get wrapped up in designing their blogs and writing or taping their content. But creating your content is the easy part. Of course your product should be as good as it can be, but it should also be the least time-consuming element of your whole endeavor. What you do after you tape your show or write your blog is the whole game. Creating community, that's where the bulk of your hustle is going to go, and that's where your bulk success will come from. I'm going to veer off the script. This is the part of the audiobook that you need to pay attention. So kick the kids out of the room, pull over for the fourth time, depending on how you're listening to this, pour yourself a nice glass of wine or an awesome bottle of root beer, because we're about to get into the real differentiator, the real piece that really separates the men from the boys. And I really hope you grasp this part, because this is the part most people don't want to do. This is the part that most people don't like, but this is by far the part that wins the game. Creating community is all about starting conversations. When you move into a new house, you meet your neighbors by going out in the evenings and shaking hands with people walking their dogs or taking their runs, complimenting people on their gardens, introducing your kids if you notice the family playing in the yard has children at the same age. If you're going to a conference, you meet your fellow attendees by introducing yourself and shaking hands with everyone else who's milling around. You trade anecdotes and information, hand out your business card. Creating community online works exactly the same way. To create an audience for your personal brand, you're going to have to get out there, shake hands, and join every single conversation already in play around your topic. Every single one. Jared Montz is a retired professional soccer player who relies heavily on just about every platform we've discussed in this book to build his brand, America's first online soccer academy, jmsoccer10.com. Though he barely understood Facebook and didn't have a Twitter account when he started, he now considers them his biggest assets, using them to build a community of soccer fans and friends, draw traffic to his site, and alert followers whenever he posts a new blog, video, or podcast. That's right, he uses all three. He says, "I go to bed at 3 a.m. and wake up at 6 a.m. and spend hours commenting and talking with other people about soccer. Not selling them my stuff, but talking about soccer. They will find out what I do on their own without me spamming them." His equipment, a laptop, his fiance's 6-year-old camera, a tripod, and his iPhone. Is he crushing it? In his own words, "I'm having a blast." It's fun to meet people and players no matter what, but business-wise, the potential is just scary. It takes a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, but if you love it, then it's all worth it. Every subject, no matter how small, has an internet trench. You need to find it. Googling is a great way to start. Every night after taping an episode of my show, I'd spend the next 8 or 9 hours on the internet wine trenches, digging up as much information as possible about who was talking about wine and wine-related subjects and products, what they were saying, where they were going, what they were reading, what they are drinking, what they were buying, and who they were slamming. And then I'd start reaching out. At a certain point, your business will start gaining eyeballs and your community focus will change. Whereas at this point, you're initiating contact with anyone who might have an interest in your passion. Later, you will spend these late night hours responding to people who are responding to you, sending you emails, tweets, Facebook status updates. Building and sustaining community is a never-ending part of doing this business. I would read hundreds of blog posts and leave comments on many of them. I'd spend time on wine forums, read what other people had to say, and then leave comments on those comments. You're going to be doing exactly the same thing. Here's how. First, create your blog post and distribute it through TubeMogul or Ping FM. This way, your content appears up in every social network platform you've established. We talked about that earlier. Next, start paying attention to other people's content. You're going to use the tools we discussed in the last chapter, like Twitter search, to seek out every mention of your topic on the internet. And you're going to comment on every single blog and forum post and tweet you can find. Now, you're not going to say something just for the sake of saying something. You're an expert, right? You love your topic and you've been doing the research. So leave expert, intriguing, thoughtful, provocative, intelligent comments with your name that links back to your blog. Last, you're going to capture. If you're as good as you should be when you're talking about your passion, people are going to be intrigued by what you have to say. Even if they don't follow you immediately, if they see you appear on their site often enough, they may get curious enough to follow you back to your blog, and that's when you've got them. You know how to solidify your fan base. Pay attention to them. I picked up the phone to talk to people when it seemed warranted or appropriate. The chalkboard behind me during my first video blog episodes were for hardcore fans. Whatever appeared there was a message or an inside joke just for them. Little gestures like that, like, "Hey, I'm seeing you and I appreciate you," is an enormous value. Capture. You just brought someone who's interested in your topic to your blog on the devoted topic. What you do now is exactly the same as I used to do when somebody walked through the store looking for a bottle of wine. I'd send them home with 2 cases. You monetize the heck out of every interaction. In this case, you're not giving people something to drink. You're giving them something to think about and ultimately talk about. If your content is smart and interesting and eye-catching and entertaining, if you're the best, it should be that most people who come to your blog will be happy regular readers, viewers, or listeners. Make it easy for them. We covered the importance of user interface and call to action buttons in chapter 6. Call to action buttons include, this is where you might want to write something down, it gets important here, subscribe. It allows people to opt in and get an email every time you post a blog. Follow me. It keeps viewers apprised of your tweets and status updates. Join my fan page. Announces to the viewer's newsfeed that they think enough of you to be a fan and helps put your site on other people's radars. Share. Makes it easy for viewers to post a link to Facebook, MySpace, etc. tweet this allows them to scale by putting a tweet out about your stuff. Email this allows people to email that post to friends. Your long-term goal is to get sticky and create more and more opportunities to communicate. Your audience joins your fan page. They comment on your blog. They tweet your posts. And slowly but surely, their friends take notice and start doing the same. And their friends take notice. And suddenly, your little community of one episode is a major player in the space. The power of one. How do you know when you've built a community? When one person is listening. WineLiber TV had 5 viewers at first, and I was thrilled to have them. Don't get obsessed with how many friends or fans are following you. The stats are only marginally important. What's important is the intensity of your community's engagement and interaction with you. At this point, the quality of the conversation is much more revealing than the number of people having it. If your content is making people talk enough so they start to make some noise, I guarantee you're going to see more people show up to your party. As long as you're seeing your audience grow, even modestly, over the first 4 to 5 months, you're doing what you're supposed to be. The day you see that one person is reading or watching or listening to you is the day to celebrate. It's an amazing thing to know someone gives a crap about what you've got going on in your mind, in your world, in your life. Don't take people for granted. The power of this new word of mouth game that we're in is that one interested person has unbelievable reach. Believe me, one day you'll miss your very small, intimate community where you could carry a substantial conversation and get to know people really well. I know I do, but I still get in there daily, and I still try. But I do want to give a huge shout out to the original Vaniacs like Kahuna and Tim F., Italian Stallion, Tampa Steve, NY Pete, Barbados, and on and on and on. You guys really mean a lot to me, and I thank you so much. Next steps. Now that you have a community, you've got some place to put a killer marketing strategy into play. The one I use is the best in the world and has never failed me and is the next chapter. Chapter 9. The best marketing strategy ever. Are you guys ready? Are you ready for this? Because here it comes. The greatest marketing strategy ever. Chapter 9. The chapter I've been most emailed about since this book came out in October. You ready? Here it is. Let's get into the chapter. Care. That's it. We're moving on to chapter 10. The greatest marketing strategy ever is care. If you care about your audience, you will never, ever lose. Not bullshit caring. Real caring. Actually really, really caring. Going the extra mile, going the extra 40 miles, having a real relationship with your audience. That is 1,000% the game. Chapter 10. Make the world listen. Any topic can be turned into a profitable, sustainable social media-driven business. Let's see how we can pull together all the tools and concepts we've discussed so far and build a business around it, something that's fun and exciting. Let's try accounting. Let's say you start on Monday. So on Monday, the first day of the rest of your life, you'll be doing the following. You will go to GoDaddy, and you will try to buy your name, as in TimSocks.com or SallyMcGee.com or GaryVaynerchuk.com. If it is not available, try to buy the .tv. Now, I got lucky. My name is Gary Vaynerchuk. But you might be Robert Smith. Sorry, CPA Robert Smith. You're screwed. Obviously, somebody owns robertsmith.com. And maybe even robertsmithcpa.com. Now, it's time to get a little creative. How about bobthebudgetman.tv? If you can't come up with anything appropriate, then you've got to really think about this and brainstorm. But I'm telling you right now, owning your name.com is the biggest and most important thing you can do. And if you want to build a personal brand and it's available to buy off somebody, then you've got to do that. It's that important. Buy both .com and .tv if possible, because you never know if you're going to need them both. And there's no obligation to launch them. both. While you're at it, buy the domain names for your children if you can. In addition, note that every time you hear about a new platform that looks like it's going to go mainstream, make sure you register your name, like twitter.com/GaryVaynerchuk or facebook.com/GaryVaynerchuk. Speaking of which, I am facebook.com/Gary, G-A-R-Y, so please hit me up and say hello. I see no other reasons to buy any of the other extensions like .org or .ca or .me, but I could be mistaken. For the most part, almost every piece of advice I give you here, if your instincts tell you that I'm wrong, then go out and prove me wrong. And when you did, email me. Because this isn't a situation where I want to preach to you. This is a situation where I want to articulate to you what I've lived. You know, I'm not a social media expert. I've gone out and done this. I've built businesses on this. So I'm going from experience. I don't talk about things in theory or I think things are going to happen. I talk about things after I've already done them. So please, if you feel like some of these things are wrong, you listen to yourself, not me. Next, start a WordPress or Tumblr account. This is the blog that is going to host the domain you just bought. Next, and this is big, hire a web designer. I know. I said the production value has no value. However, this is the exception. Having navigated a million bad designs on the internet, I've come to the conclusion that hiring a designer to make sure that you've got excellent user interface in the form of properly placed links and buttons is a worthwhile investment. This is the one place where I'm telling you to spend money. You want to create content from a home base, and all the networks are going to be doing is getting you new customers into your quote-unquote store. If this does not look nice, and the store and the products are not properly shelved or displays are not in the right spots, you will not convert, no matter how hard you hustle or sweat. Imagine spending 9 hours promoting this new store, and again, I'm using store as your blog, opening it, and then thousands of people showing up and ready to buy something, but sales sucked. It's because your design was not on point. A service like this will cost you between $1,000 and $5,000. But if you're on a budget, don't sweat it. Don't put off launching your site because you can't afford a designer. Start for free and customize later, especially if you're doing WordPress. There are enormous WordPress themes out there that are amazing. I still think a professional designer will give you a better look and feel, but the WordPress themes are really good. Next, if you're filming a video blog, buy a flip cam. Something small and light, preferably the Mino HD or something like that. It's really simple. There's a lot of great stuff. I know Kodak's got some good stuff. Create a Facebook fan page. Create a Twitter account. If you're doing video, create a TubeMogul account. And if you're doing a written blog, get a Ping FM account. Start pumping out content. Let's say you're charismatic and have good screen presence and decided to do a series of video blogs of fun facts for the CPA. Every night you post a video of yourself explaining tax rules in your unique, informative, entertaining way, educating your audience yet also revealing why you are passionate about what some may think is a dry and extremely boring subject. Talk about whatever you like as long as it doesn't get you in trouble with your parent company. For example, explain the recent change in the presidential administration and how it may affect the ordinary taxpayer. What really happens if a person misses the April 15th deadline? What strategic financial issues should a small company consider before deciding to grow? Put as much content out there as you can. There are people in your field who will hate you because you'll be offering up information for free for which they have often charged. That's okay. When viewers need accounting help, whom are they going to go to? The guy with the business or the guy who's been out there really helping them and providing open and honest conversations and content and helping them along the way? Find ways to incorporate some personal stories and details into your posts. Use anecdotes from your own life to illustrate concepts. Let your personality shine so that eventually people who have no need for accounting information are coming to hear you just because it's you. Tweet or post your content via Ping FM or TubeMogul to distribute it to all your chosen platforms. Next, go to search.twitter and start searching things like taxes, 401k, accounts payable, and anything else that might be relevant to your blog topic. Start following these people. Keep in mind that Twitter does not allow you to follow more than 10% of the people who are following you. Better yet, don't follow them. At reply them publicly and start a conversation. Extend your hand. Say, hey, I think I can help you with that, with no hidden agenda. Next, go to blogsearch.google.com or go to Google and above you'll see a little tab that says more and then choose blogs from the pull-down menu. Start typing in terms like taxes or filing or any other term that is relevant in your world. For every blog where you find mentions of these terms, you're going to leave a good comment. You're not going to just be there to spam or hope they're coming back to your blog. Read these blogs carefully and add 2 cents. Your name will link back to your blog, but what's really going to get them there is the fact that you left something relevant and added to the conversation. You weren't there just to get them to come back to your blog. Then, search the word accountant on Facebook. Click on a tab for all results, and then click the pages tab. There are hundreds of fan pages, some with 9 members, some with thousands. Join as many active ones as possible, but make sure to keep track of all of them. When you're done, hit the tab for groups and do the same thing. Although I don't recommend creating your own group, there's no reason you shouldn't get your name on as many pre-existing ones as possible. Finally, rinse and repeat. Over and over. Day after day, hour after hour. Everything we just talked about. If this sounds tedious or repetitive, just turn off this audiobook right now. Go and enjoy the rest of your life. Have fun. Play Nintendo, because you are not cut out to what I'm talking about. If you're willing to hustle, though, you'll find that you don't get tired of the hunt because every conversation leads to another opportunity and you're enjoying it because you love it. What's boring about that? Here's your answer. Nothing. A few additional steps. Don't forget to include a list of all your social networks like Twitter, Facebook, and anything else you're active on in your email signature, in your business cards or letterhead. Email signature is a big one, guys. Next, make sure you have a big fat button on your site that says, want to do business with me, or something along that lines. A quick call to action is huge. We're thinking of this brand building as a marathon, not a sprint, right? So right now, that button will just be there as a reminder of where you're ultimately going with your brand. It's unlikely you'll get a lot of biz dev offers right off the bat, but you never know. More likely, as you build your community, you will see the following progression. First, enthusiastic fans. Next, free product offers from businesses that notice your growing fan base. Finally, biz dev deals from individuals smart enough to see they need to do business with you while you're still affordable. One of my favorite mantras is, anything is better than zero. Guys, please write this down in your head and live with it forever. Anything is better than zero when you're starting a business. But true to my contradictory nature, let me just say that the longer you hold out to monetize your blog, the better. Everyone's financial situation is different, and you may feel compelled to take some of the first offers you get from advertisers, for example. Try to wait, not just because the stronger and bigger your audience, the more cash you can demand when the time is right, but because as soon as you start focusing on monetizing, by necessity, you will start paying less attention to your content and community. When you're ready, though, the opportunities to monetize your personal brand will blow your frickin' mind. Chapter 11, Start Monetizing. Up until now, we've been focusing on building your brand by creating killer content and getting that content some traction by building your community, one email, one comment, one tweet, one status update at a time. Once you feel you've grown to a point where your brand is sticky and your audience has made your content a regular, even necessary part of their community and their online experience, you can start to actively create revenue streams. Unlike in the beginning, when you throw out a big net into a pond, hoping to capture as many members of social media fish as you can, you're now going to drop your line into a variety of small ponds. Be patient. In the meantime, if you continue to hustle, you grow your presence and improve your skills to the point where fish, really big fish, will be jumping straight into your hands. Some revenue ponds to consider are the following. Advertising. A lot has been made of the fact that magazines and newspapers are being crippled because companies are pulling their ads to save money during this recession or softening we're going through. Well, of course they are. The cost of radio, magazine, newspaper advertising, that space is not in line with the returns in today's world. But companies need to sell. if they're going to stay alive, which means that even if their budgets are somewhat smaller than they used to be, they have to spend money to remind consumers they exist. If they want to sell products, they have to advertise. The difference now is they're not going to be wasting their money by throwing it against the wall and seeing what sticks. There are hundreds of billions of dollars in ad revenue out there.